This is the Outlap F1 Podcast, featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap!
What is up, Outlap F1 Nation? Welcome to 2024. Welcome into the Outlap F1 Podcast. I guess we're going to call this season 6. I guess this is technically our second episode because of the kind of rant thing I did the other night. But you've got Andy, and I'm along with my wonderful usual preview co-host and sometimes, oftentimes, race review co-host as well. Cody, it is good to see you, sir. How's the off-season been treating you?
It's been going great. I've had some nice trips, some nice time off, saw the family, really hankering to have some F1 come back. So it's good that we're doing this, get to shake off the rust a little bit and get back in the swing of things.
Yeah, definitely. I've literally upgraded a lot of my software. The platform has had some updates. Everything it seems needed to be reinstalled or something. So a lot of this is kind of the check on, let's make sure it all kind of works. Actually found some stuff out because of this, but, so the normal intro that you normally hear us, where we usually say we're proud members of the Ship It Studios Podcast Network, that will be no more. The Ship It Studios Podcast Network is being retired, and effectively we are back to, I guess, being free agents. So we are, I guess, single and ready to mingle, I guess would be the term. that having been said, we actually did get a lot from the partnership. I thought it was actually really good for us overall as a show. We got to meet some amazing people. We did some collab work with the Games We Grew Up With folks. During the Miami Grand Prix, they were our eyes and ears on the ground for the first time that F1 raced there. That was a great experience. We got to meet those people, as well as get some exposure to some other content creators out there and kind of share notes, compare, you know, what they're doing versus what we're doing. So I'm thankful for the time that we had. But as they say, all good things, you know, sometimes do come to an end. But thank you to all of those people. And but like I said, we're going to keep going. So we are now officially on the market. So we can get back to that. But you can still find us on Twitter, X, whatever the hell the name of that platform is. We're still there, dang it. You can still find us on Instagram, Discord, Reddit to an extent, YouTube. We're still on YouTube. At Outlap F1 Podcast is the handle. If you like what you're seeing and you like what you're hearing and you're on YouTube, if you could do us a favor, click the like and the subscribe button. Just helps our content get to you a little bit quicker. If you're on your favorite podcasting app, we're still posting to Apple Podcasts. We're still posting to Spotify. We're still posting to many of the large ones. If you want to click that 5-star button, again, helps us come a little bit up more, a little bit better in search results, helps us get our stuff to you a little bit faster. Email, still working. Chat now at outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. Website, I have to do some maintenance on. It's currently down. I'm working on trying to get that back up, but it will be www.outlapf1.com when it makes its triumphant return. Outlap F1 Nation, who's continued to support us throughout all of this. So thank you so much to Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quinton Warden, Kevin Kelly, continues to send my inbox full of fun Instagram memes. Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and of course, Jonathan Scott. If you'd like to become a member of the hashtag Outlap F1 Nation, see our link tree in our show notes. It's our anchor page, $5. All goes into the all the updates that we have to do. So we would be most appreciative of that. And one final reminder, you can always check out the good folks at Manscaped. Use our code OUTLAP. That's still working. Gets you 20% off, gets you free shipping. Check that out if you are so inclined. I'm hoping by the time the season starts, we'll actually have a couple more actual reads that I'm working on finalizing the details of. So it'll be kind of the abridged version of the particulars tonight, but there is more coming, and we're thankful to all of those potential partners that we're looking forward to dealing with in the next little bit. All right, so much for that boring offseason. I think when we last left off, we thought the grid was set, The calendar was set. Didn't think there was going to be anything a whole lot to drop, and then kablammo. So the two big stories that broke this week, back-to-back days, actually. We're going to pretty much talk about the two biggies, and then we'll talk about some of the other stuff, too. The two biggies. One, the Andretti news that FOM has rejected the Andretti Global bid at the current time. And then two, the one that happened. It happened again, Cody. I don't get it. I go to post an episode, and major F1 news breaks as I'm doing that. I'd recorded my thoughts on the Andretti thing that night. I go to post it. I'd finally gotten everything back working the way it was supposed to. And I go to hit send, and I'm seeing, you know, the fringy sources starting to report this Lewis Hamilton thing. And then the more credible sources had it. And then BBC had it. And then Chris Medlin had it. And then I go, whoa, yeah, this is actually happening. So we're going to get into, we'll dive into the Lewis story going to Ferrari in 2025. Those are our two biggies. But Cody, I'll let you do a little bit of programming. Where would you like to start?
The thing that's freshest in my mind is definitely the Lewis Hamilton going to Ferrari.
All right.
Which is huge news.
Oh, I mean, massive doesn't even begin to... It's not a big enough word, unfortunately. So this breaks Thursday morning. I think it was actually probably leaked is the way it kind of turned out, because both teams were caught completely aware but unaware type of thing, because they basically needed the next 8 hours to kind of get their ducks in a row before they actually confirmed what everybody was reporting. But yeah, Lewis Hamilton will trigger his apparent exit clause. So we knew back in July when he signed the air quote 2-year deal, apparently that second year has a bunch of exit clauses and he's exercised it. So he will leave Mercedes, where he has been since 2011.
2013.
You're correct. 2013. Yeah, 2013. So that's a more than a decade in. He will leave Mercedes and he will move over to Ferrari. So I've done enough talking for a while. Cody, what's your thought on all this?
First of all, I was just as surprised and startled as you, as everyone else, by the news. I'm waking up in the morning, doing stretches, getting ready for work, pull up the phone, and, you know, Google tailors your homepage at this point. So the first thing that pops up is Lewis Hamilton to Ferrari from a credible source. And I was, you know, instantly all the sleep from my eyes is gone. I'm like, whoa, oh my God. You know, we've heard rumors about it here and there for a few years, talking about why he might be interested in doing something like that. And it's finally come to fruition. And I think it's really exciting. And I think it makes a lot of sense for Lewis Hamilton and for Ferrari to do this. You know, Hamilton gets to check off his bucket list that he's raced for Ferrari, you know, longest tenured Formula One team, most successful Formula One team. So many great drivers have raced there at some point in their career, and he gets to be one of them. So, you know, I think he's even said before that that's something he's thought about, that it would be a big milestone in his career to be able to say that he's raced for Ferrari. So he gets that side of it. It also sounds like Ferrari is going to be paying him a boatload of money. So I'm sure he's real happy about that part as well. Ferrari gets to have, you know, the most successful Formula One driver of all time race for them, even if it's just for a few years. And they get all of the, you know, the fandom that comes with Lewis Hamilton. You know, Lewis Hamilton does so much outside of F1 as well these days. So they're going to benefit from all of that promotion. It really makes great sense for both of them. And from the racing side of things, Ferrari and Mercedes, you know, neither one of them has been bad. Neither one of them has been able to stand up against Red Bull for the next few years. So I figure he's got to be thinking that he's not really going to be losing out too much on performance by leaving Mercedes right now, or in a year, I guess. Now he's got the awkward bit of racing for Mercedes this year. But I don't see the pecking order changing too much for 2025. So he'll get a year in a at least moderately successful car at Ferrari to finish out these regulations. And it looks like he's got an option to extend into 2026 and who knows beyond into these new regulations. We're getting a double whammy this time, new aerodynamic regulations, new engines. It's going to be a doozy that could toss, you know, everything that we know about Formula One right now up in the air. I gotta imagine he wants to see at least 1 year of the new regulations just on the chance that Ferrari gets it right. And he has a chance to get that elusive eighth championship, at which point I have to imagine he will retire on the spot. But yeah, it's really exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about a marketing and a branding powerhouse of two forces within Formula One kind of joining forces and trying to dominate. Ferrari better have a really good contract with their merchandising department, because you're not going to find it. You're not going to be able to find it, especially anywhere in the UK, I think. I think they're already taking pre-orders on 2025 merchandise if they can. just that potential alone. Lewis's commercial value is quantifiable. One, Ferrari, the day that this was announced, I think the Ferrari stock jumped like 8% on the news of that and some other really good results for them. So there is a tangible value that Lewis's name alone brings. And I even put it in here. I said, you know, if this is successful and he goes and wins number 8 in red, it's bronze freaking statue time. It's, you know, he gets to ride off into the sunset doing something that his idol Ayrton Senna wasn't able to do. He set all the records. He eclipses Michael Schumacher's record in a Ferrari. That's it. You know, there's really no – you're never going to cap that. You're never going to beat that. And I think you're absolutely right. If he happens to win the championship in 2025, I don't think he cares what the regulations say in 2026. So, yeah, and not only that, but, I mean, the Italians are going to be writing hymns and they're going to be singing them in the churches for years with Lewis's name, the Tifosi, you know, it's all of that. All of that is here and in play. The one thing that I don't know, and what is going to be the question that we're all going to ask between now and when he actually suits up in red, is has he gotten the timing of this right like he did in 2012 when he left McLaren and went to Mercedes just as they were coming into their dawn of being the next big powerhouse? And that is a big giant unknown for me, at least in terms of racing, because, I mean, I wish, you know, unfortunately Deanna wasn't able to be with us tonight, but she would have probably chimed in with Ferrari only gets it right like once a decade. And maybe this is the time they do get it right. But from a racing standpoint, I almost view this as much more of a lateral move than anything. I don't think his percentage or his probability of winning the championship changes significantly between what Mercedes could offer and what Ferrari could offer, especially going into those 2026 regs where it's a giant reset. Now, I do think Ferrari's a little bit farther down the road in their development path than Mercedes has been, because Mercedes has had to pivot and start over, and they've, you know, put a lot into this year's car, and we're going to find out in a couple weeks when they all go testing, you know, has any of that started to, have they found a path to get themselves back to where they are? But I don't know how this is going to go from a racing standpoint. It could be the greatest story ever told. It could be, you know, the Sebastian Vettel 2.0 experience that went well, but not great.
Which in itself is the Alonso 2.0
right.
experience.
Right. Does this follow the Fernando Alonso, the Sebastian Vettel, the Kimi Raikkonen coming back? All of that. There's been a number of big names who have gone through those turnstiles at Maranello and who haven't been able to secure a championship. This is a team that hasn't won a driver's since Kimi Raikkonen in 2007. So there's a lot of work that's going to have to be done on both sides. This isn't just instant. And, oh, yeah, Thanos is still there. Last time I checked, he's still there. He's still in his prime. He's still got Adrian Newey working for him. probably designing the most aerodynamically efficient cars ever known to man. So there's a lot to that's going to have to be done positively to get him over that line. But yeah, I mean, it's a hell of a get. It's a hell of a get. It also tells me John Elkann is running that organization. Any of the old guard that may have been loyal to Luca di Montezemolo, that battle has been fought, and Luca, you have lost. Because John Elkann is definitely running that team. He signed not only Hamilton for the foreseeable future, but another story we would have gotten to here later, but I'll bring it up now. Charles Leclerc has also signed a long-term extension. So drivers in Ferrari now or do not have a problem. I think that is a hell of a lineup to go against it, but it is kind of interesting that you have Alpha versus Alpha. We're going to have to follow how that dynamic goes. We'll see how that works, but Lewis can be a good teammate. You know, that's if he comes in and he's a good teammate and it works positively and they work together, I think it'll be fine. If Lewis is pulling like a Fernando, when Fernando like went to McLaren the first time, it may blow up. Who knows? I mean, there's as much potential for good as bad here.
I think Leclerc has the chops to make this kind of, in terms of ability, more of a Hamilton Rosberg type of situation where they're on somewhat equal footing. Leclerc has been the golden boy over there for a while now, and definitely is extremely talented, very fast. So. And they seem to get along with each other, as it is, like outside of, now going to be at the same team. So I have high hopes that they'll get along, and it'll be something really exciting to watching them actually prove themselves against each other. That part is exciting all on its own, is getting to see, Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc in equal machinery, really duking it out against each other. So we're pretty I think we're pretty much in agreement here that this is a big win for Hamilton and Ferrari. It is probably a big loss for both Mercedes and Carlos Sainz, who now is at least officially not with any team, or not going to be with any team for this upcoming season. And I'm sure we're going to hear things change on that within the next few weeks here. You would be hugely surprised if he wasn't going to be on the 2024 grid. But yeah, now this is the first domino going in the driver changes that we didn't think we were going to have for this season. So,
well, Sainz will be with Ferrari for 24.
Oh, right. Sorry. For 24. Yeah. He'll be here for 24, but I meant for 2025. I'm sure they're still going to announce relatively quickly. He seems like he knows, he knows something. He said so when he was announcing that he was leaving Ferrari, that news about his future would be coming. So something tells me there's already something in the works. What do you suppose it is?
Mr. Hard Knock Life, first of all. I mean, the guy, just for one reason or another, it just seems like the poor guy could never buy a break in his entire time at Ferrari. And oh, by the way, he was the one that did actually win a race for them last year. So, yeah, I guess that doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot. And I mean, I get it. Lewis Hamilton is a much bigger name than Carlos Sainz ever will be. Yeah. But Carlos now becomes, I think, the linchpin in what is going to be a fascinating 2025 driver market. A lot of the big names, have kind of been secured and have secured their own futures for the time being, but I still think are like 10 or 11 driver contracts that are still up at the end of this season. So yeah, where does Carlos Sainz go? I think the natural move for him goes to Steak Sauber originally, and then they'll turn into Audi. Andreas Seidel and Carlos Sainz have had a great relationship. They worked really well with each other at McLaren. I can't imagine a better name for Seidel to try to get in there, as I do think at some point Valtteri Bottas will call time on his career, because I don't think there's a whole lot left there. So I could see Botas serving out this season. I think he's actually a free agent at the end of this year too. And then signs slipping right in there to partner with Zhao, at least initially, as they transition from Sauber to Audi. The other big seat that of course remains now vacant is now what do you do at Mercedes? And I've seen names bandied about. I've seen lots of potential names bandied about. I've heard potential with Fernando Alonso. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's committed to the Aston Martin project. I don't think you've seen all that Aston Martin has to give yet in that project. But Fernando is a wild card, and he can do wild card things. And he's done wild card things before. So the second I say he's out of the equation, maybe, maybe not. You could see, I think the most logical name for Mercedes is, believe it or not, Alex Albon, guy who's been coming up the ranks at Williams, who's familiar with the Mercedes power unit. He's driven it for the last few years. Kind of the big hot property that's out there, and Mercedes can obviously outbid Williams because they just have the resources to do it. So that's my initial take on if I was doing it right now. I see signs going to Stakes Albert, and I see Albon potentially filling in at Mercedes. So you would have a George Russell, Alex Albon lineup. I think that'd be pretty formidable. I think if you're Toto Wolff, that's making the best out of a haymaker that you had thrown at you this week, because they looked like they were caught completely unaware by all of this. The next, if you're talking about Mercedes, the next logical choice might be Kimi Antonelli, who's their highly rated academy driver. You may actually see somebody go up the ladder. But here's the thing with Antonelli. This is his first year in F2. And if you're going to try to take him straight out of F2 and straight into F1, I don't know if he's favored to win the championship this year in F2. I'd have to get into that. But if he does and he comes out of the gates gangbuster, that's going to be a factor. He will be a factor in whatever Mercedes chooses to do. Don't forget about some other guys. Liam Lawson's hanging around. Sergio Perez is hanging around. If Perez finds himself out of a Red Bull seat, could he potentially bring a veteran presence back into Mercedes on a bridge deal? I'm not thinking that it's going to be anything long-term while Mercedes waits for a Kimi Antonelli. So there's a lot of moving parts, but it's all going to start with what Carlos Sainz ends up doing.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm very excited to see that. I personally think that the Andrea Kimi Antonelli angle will be very interesting to see. And it almost makes you wonder if they're going to hold off on, you know, formally signing or announcing anyone for that second seat for a while. You know, they might want to just see how this F2 season goes before they make a call what they want to do one way or the other. You never know, too. They might, you know, bring Albon into Mercedes, bring Antonelli into Williams with that hope of jumping up to Mercedes at some point down the line. It's going to be a really interesting couple of seasons here as far as where drivers are going to end up for the next stage of their career.
Yeah, if you like to play F1 Manager, this offseason is for you. let's just put it that way. You know, if you didn't get any driver movement from 23 to 24, what the grid looks like on Jan 1, 2025, other than a couple of exceptions, I think is going to look dramatically different. And oh yeah, what does Daniel Ricciardo do? You know, does he show enough to maybe? Yeah. I mean, what's not to say that he doesn't show up and put his name into the hat of either the second Red Bull seat if Perez is out, or a Mercedes seat? He's driven Mercedes power before as well. So, you know, and I do think that that matters. I really do. I think that that matters as to what power unit you've driven. And that's one of the things I'm interested to see. How does Hamilton go on with looking at new language and new terminology and all that stuff? Because he's only driven Mercedes power for his entire career. But if he can, you know, that's the interesting part of this is what happens, you know. Yeah, so we're going to be all about it. We will watch. We will sit back and eat our popcorn, and we will watch over this, and we will find out. Last topic on this one, I threw this kind of in at the end just because the nature of Formula One is teams are rising and falling all the time. Is this the end of Lewis leaving? Is this the end of what we know as the traditional Mercedes powerhouse organization? that we've known for the last, it seems like blasphemy to say it, but could this be the beginning of the end of that?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen enough to truly feel that way yet, because Mercedes definitely hasn't been the dominant, you know, show that they have been for, you know, from 2014 through 2021, but they haven't been like abysmally bad either. Like, you know, they've done well. I mean, look, Lewis Hamilton finished third in the championship. Mercedes came in second in the constructors. You know, they were only slightly worse than that in 2022. So I think that the magic is not gone yet. They've definitely have not. I mean, we know they haven't nailed these regulations. And yes, it's definitely the end of an era with Lewis Hamilton leaving. He pretty much, you know, was a big, obviously a massive part of making Mercedes into what it has become. But you still have a lot of the same key figures there at Mercedes. You still got like Toto Wolff. We always knew George Russell was going to be a Mercedes driver someday. And now he is there. And he's still got maybe a little bit to show. You know, I think he's still got plenty of potential to rise into, you know, an even better driver than he is right now. So I think that all the pieces, you know, a lot of the pieces at least are still there for Mercedes to become a successful team again. You look at, you know, teams in the past, you know, not even looking that far back. Red Bull. Red Bull was a dominant force for 4 years straight and almost had it a fifth year before that. And then they, you know, during the whole turbo hybrid regs up until, you know, someone recently, weren't that great. They weren't even second best for most of it. So, you know, they're definitely going to be rises and falls. I don't think we're going to see Mercedes anytime soon, though, stoop to, I don't want to say stoop because, you know, all these teams are you know, successful in their own right. But I don't think we're going to see their quality and ability drop to, say, the levels we've seen from, hate to say it, like McLaren for some years, you know, Williams or anything like that, where their glory days were well behind for a little while there. I think Mercedes, until we start seeing big pieces leave, like Toto Wolff, and Mercedes drop much further down the constructors, I think the magic's still there.
All right, fair question. I was just kind of trying to get your temperature on it. I don't think this is the beginning of a fall. I don't think one driver in their car, when they've realized, I mean, unless they come out in 2024 and they're saying that they realized what they made their mistakes on and they're nowhere again, or they're not any closer to the front. Because then I think then that would spurn a lot of, now Lewis is speaking in everybody's ear and says, hey, I got a nice gig over here at Maranello. You can come in. Freddie Vass has given me carte blanche. The board's given me carte blanche. We can make a nice nest over here. You know, then that starts to happen. If the 2024 car is good, then it's still a desirable seat that you're going to get. You're going to attract the top, a top driver talent, whoever that ends up ultimately being. You're going to get somebody who's going to want to be in that seat and is going to be motivated with a chance to either one, win races, or two, win a championship. So if that is still your carrot that's out there, yeah, they're fine. They will be okay. They're going to lose some brand. They're going to lose some recognition for a couple of years. That's, again, the power of what Lewis does. But I don't see this as a fall. I don't see this as multiple, you know, when McLaren had its struggles, it was because multiple things happened almost in unison. I don't think that's the case with Mercedes here, at least not yet. Now we'll have to see what Lewis takes with him when he actually moves over. But
I was actually wondering, do you suppose his race engineer, Bono, is going to go with him?
That's the hot rumor, is he's the potentially maybe moving over. I just can't wait to hear when Lewis says this tire strategy is terrible and they come back and go, yep, we're checking.
Oh my God.
And what happens then? Or it doesn't happen, or they figure it out. Like that, to me, from a racing standpoint, that is the one thing that I don't get. I don't get how you're going to fix that Ferrari strategy desk, because, and that's on Fred Vasseur to try to fix. Because until that gets fixed, I don't see them getting over the line. They're going to build a fast car. There's no doubt about it in my mind that they're going to build a fast car out of the gate. It's going to qualify really well. What does it do with race pace? Can it make tires last? Mm-hmm. Can it be the tire whisperer that Verstappen is and that Perez is in the Red Bull? That's the question. All right. Well, we've talked about this for a half an hour. Holy moly. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the other news story, the Andretti story, and then we'll wrap up with some other small stuff. So come on back. We'll re-rack and we'll get into it.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop.
All right, welcome back in. This is season 6. Hard to believe we're saying that. Wow. Season 6 is episode 2. This is our welcome back to 2024 in the F1 world episode. You've got Andy and I along with Cody tonight. And we just talked about the fun and exciting story of Lewis going over from Mercedes to Ferrari. And now we have to talk about something that's probably a little harder to do. We got the news about the Andretti bid being rejected. Go check out season 6, episode 1. You can hear my raw reaction to it. I take you through all of the rejection points and why they are complete and total BS. And that's, I'm being nice. of all that, I've got them up on my screen here, but, Cody, I'll just let you kind of freeform. It came out Wednesday. I think as American F1 fans, I think the universal reaction is we're all very disappointed that this isn't happening. I'll let you freeform and go from here.
It's definitely disappointing. I also think it was pretty much expected after everything that we've seen up until now with the back and forth between the FIA and Formula One. And Andretti being in all of it, I think we all had a sneaking suspicion that their bid was going to be rejected, at least in the immediate term. And it is definitely disappointing. The Andretti name has been very successful in motor racing, especially, here in the States in IndyCar. Mario Andretti won Formula One back in the day, and still could be extremely exciting to see a new 11th team with that kind of recognition behind it joining Formula One. I still have high hopes that it will happen at some point. But yes, for now, it is not to be, at least for the next few years. And I agree with you that the reasons given seem mostly bogus. In my opinion, my humble opinion, I think a really big part of it is that the Formula One teams want Andretti to shell out a ton more money in order to, have a slice of the pie and be at the table and all those things. They know that, they stand to be able to change that agreement for how much money needs to be paid to the other teams to join. And they're, in my opinion, trying to delay until they can change that to say, oh, well, originally it was, what, $200 million or something, which is a nutty money anyway, and now they're probably just kicking the can down the road until they can change that to be like, oh, well, now you have to pay everyone, or, pay us all like $600 million because Formula One's more popular now, and we think it's worth that much more. I think that is probably at the root of it, is the money. They want to keep their money that they're getting now that Formula One is becoming more profitable, and if we're going to have an 11th team join the grid in any capacity, they want even more money for that. And so I think that's at the root of it, because, a lot of the reasons are bogus. They say that Andretti isn't really going to bring any value to Formula One, that they feel really it's more the other way around, that Formula One would be bringing value to Andretti. Yes, of course they would be, but it's mutual. You bring value to each other. You Andretti would just serve that much more to bring fans of American motorsport into the Formula One circle. I feel like you can't say that they're not bringing any value to the sport. You ask anybody, and I think as fans, you'd get a pretty much universal response that yes, an 11th team joining Formula One, just an 11th team would be great. And for it to be, a name like Andretti, who's, their teams have had success in motorsport. It's not like you're getting some, crap team off the street that's never made a car before. They're working on it as we speak, trying to make cars for regulations that they're never going to race in. So it's, it astounds me to say that they're not going to bring any value to Formula One, or at least not enough value. The one that makes maybe a little bit more sense is that, Cadillac has not agreed to supply engines to Andretti until, 2028.
Yep.
And so that would mean that if Andretti joined starting from 2025, that they would, be a customer team for those holdover years and would need to purchase engines from another team. That team would, I think they've said, would pretty much most likely be Renault. And, combining that, being the customer purchase team, I don't even remember exactly what they said, why that wasn't a good idea.
I've got it in front of me. It will be damaging to the prestige and standing of the championship. I love that.
Yeah, right.
I absolutely love that.
Yeah. So that one's definitely crap. The other side of it that I love too, that they said like, if they come in 2025, they're going to have to design a car for those regulations and then immediately turn around and have to build a different car for the new regulations. And it's like, okay,
that's their choice.
So what? Yeah. let them do it. And, they'll at least get a season under their belt being in Formula One, even if it's not in a great car, that they kind of had to design for 1 year. At least they'll get, all of the kinks worked out with, running the team at least a little bit before they start with a brand new car in 2026. Like, I think that's pretty bogus excuse that they have there too. So, not a whole lot of solid ground to stand on with why they're rejecting Andretti. And I think pretty much everybody knows that. On the plus side though, and I'm sure you've addressed this already, but they have left verbiage in to potentially allow Andretti to try this again for 2028 when they do have Cadillac back in them. They got their shiny industry backer, Cadillac, GM, big names. If that's really the value that Formula One is looking for, it'll be there in 2028, and I think they know that. So they're trying to leave the door open. Maybe it's to try to kick the can down the road for Andretti, so that Andretti doesn't try to sue them in the short term. But I still have, like I said at the beginning, high hopes that we will see Andretti on the grid at some point. Maybe in 2028. But for the short term, why they said no is pretty bogus.
Yeah, I mean, as I detailed, my capstone of these six reasons that were given, you could have written this the minute after Andretti signed the application and handed it in. There's no hard data. There's nothing cited. There's nothing to dig into. They decided they didn't want to do it, and then they tasked some poor staff member with, we need some reasons, so this is what we talked about. So go ahead and draft those up into sentence form. And this is basically what you get. It doesn't hold its merit. Even a few days afterwards, I stand by everything I said before. It doesn't hold up at all. And it's complete bull crap. And it for people like me who've been stumping for this sport for as long as I can remember, And you probably have been too, Cody. I mean, if people find out you like this, the first thing they always, that's what they do at the Indy 500, right? Well, no, it's really more based in Europe, and you have to give it some context, and you got to explain here and there. And that's fine. I got no problem doing that. And I got no problem back in a sport that I'm very passionate and enjoy talking about. But that doesn't mean that when the sport does something that is a facepalm event and does something incredibly dumb, stupid, and short-sighted, that it's not okay to call them out on this, because absolutely we should. And the response has been universal. If there is one thing that has united the fan bases, even the Hamilton and the Verstappen fan bases, those accounts are all saying the same thing. What the hell are you doing? It makes so much sense that it just doesn't, it doesn't add up. However you look at it, this conclusion does not add up with what the facts of the situation really are. I do think you're right about the money, and I do think they are kicking the can down the road, and maybe that's where this ultimately gets to. But, and that just sucks. That just, from a team that's committed, from the fans that all want to see it, to all the good that it could bring, you know, in maybe the first couple years, your pie's going to go down, but guess what? Your pie's going to get bigger, and you're going to cross over that thing, and then you're going to have more pie. I feel like I want to give these guys an Econ 101 lesson.
I feel the Rams building up.
Oh, go check that out. I'm gonna take this off my screen before I get mad again, and go back to my normal thing. But I guess so. We know that this is obviously not going to happen. So you're not going to see it in 25. You're not going to see it in 26. Okay, and you're not going to see it in 27. The interesting legal dilemma that this puts everybody into is the FIA has every right to go sue FOM about this because they've rubber stamped it. Andretti could go in and sue it. The question there is that then it's got to go in front of some international tribunal court, and you never know what you're going to get out of there. So interesting that the Andretti response is, well, our heads are down. We're going to make the car. We're going to proceed as though this, whether you say yes or not, we're going to make it. Part of me hopes they actually put together a car, take it over to Circuit of the Americas and run the thing and maybe break a track record or two. Because wouldn't that be interesting?
That would be cool.
So,
oh yeah,
I don't think this is done. This is not done. And I do think, practically what you're going to see is you're going to see a new Concord agreement. Whether or not that Concord agreement has all 10 teams in it or not, I'm suspect of. I can think of one that is teetering on the brink. And if they're out, maybe the entry gets sold and that's how they get in, or they're going to wait until 2028 and come in that way with their shiny OEM and be shiny enough to get admitted into the elite club. So anyway, we'll watch it. We will continue to watch like we do and report on what we have. Check out my rant episode. There's a couple times where my voice cracks. It's probably quite funny, especially when they're talking about shiny new OEM. But anyway, go check that out. But yeah, those were the two biggies: the Lewis story and obviously the Andretti bid getting rejected. We've had some other stuff that's come across that I think we should at least talk about. The first one, and this feels like forever ago now. Gunther Steiner, Mr. Drive to Survive, guys maybe getting a CBS sitcom based on his life. He is out at Haas. The only team principal the team has ever known. Ayo Kodomitsu, who's been with Haas also since the beginning, now takes over as the team principal. When Gene came on, I got some local baseball team flashbacks. It reminded me of when he spoke to what Jerry Reinsdorf said about with the White Sox, where it's his team, he's going to run it his way, and damned if anyone's going to tell him something different. I mentioned a team on the brink. I think this is the team on the brink. I'll just come right out and say it. I think they're a team that is on the brink. The upgrades didn't work. They've even come out and said, like, they had a car reveal. Did anybody care? We've actually seen our first rendering of a real 2024 car, and I don't think anybody gave a crap because they've all but said they think they're going to be in the back. Do we have to get out the 107% rule for these guys? I mean, yikes. This sounds bad.
it's really discouraging when you're before the season has started, you're before, you know, the car's been on the track and run or anything like that, and you're already tempering people's expectations, pretty much being like, now don't get your hopes up, we're probably gonna suck. And it feels like Haas is perennially that team. Like, they're just, you know, we had a glimpse at the beginning of these new regulations that made us go, maybe they could do something, but they keep falling behind. They're not doing strong enough development. You're probably not getting enough money in the team. And they you know, even when they look decent, they eventually just slide back and they can't get it done. And now that Gunther Steiner is gone, I would say Steiner was like the one redeeming thing about Haas, is that, yeah, they suck most of the time. And, you know, yeah, they're kind of like, haha, always at the back. But, you know, at least Steiner had some like personality and pizzazz and, you know, however you thought he was actually doing the team principal gig, at least he was entertaining and brought something to that team that made people want to pay attention. You know, he, you know, in my opinion, made Drive to Survive like, you know, really funny in some parts. And now that he's gone, you know, you lose that personality and pizzazz. What do you got left? You got a crappy team that's always run at the back with, you know, and this is, you know, maybe a little bit of a blow to Hülkenberg and
K-Mag.
Wow, I am. Yeah, thank you, K-Mag. Big blank. You know, their peak of their career is past, I would say. And, you know, so what does the team have left to strive for and hope toward? You know, we already went through one big reg change and they didn't get any better, really. And we're going to go into another reg change in a couple of years. And, you know, they're probably going to just try to make it work until then. And then we're going to have the reg change and they're probably not going to get any better. And, you know, how long do we have to keep going with Gene Haas, you know, just injecting just enough money into the team that they're staying afloat and staying on the grid, but like, is it exciting? No, like, you know, they're never going to be a great team or even a midfield team at the rate they're going. So it's like, you know, I feel like drivers that go to race for Haas, you know, it's pretty much signing the death warrant on your career at this point. You're going to drive a crappy car. You're going to always be at the back, and then no one's going to want you because they're not going to see what you have to offer. So,
yeah, the Ferrari B model, I think, has been proven that it hasn't worked. They wanted to be what Toro Rosso or AlphaTauri or Visa Red Bull Cash App, whatever they're calling themselves now, which is a whole nother realm of stupidity that when Deanna's on. I'm going to let her take the lead on that story because I want to hear what she has to say about that one. But, yeah, I mean, the one thing that Gunther takes with him is brutal honesty. And he was at least being in Gene's face, telling him, look, this is really what, if you want to compete, this is what you have to do. A to B to C to D. I remember I know he had a book out and I don't know if it's chapter in his book, but I've heard an interview with him where he said, well, yeah, I could tell you, if you tell me my delta to Red Bull or whoever the top team is 1.5 seconds, I can go through each part of the car that's adding up to that 1.5 seconds and why it's not good enough. And Gene, over the years, has not wanted to hear it. And he just is firmly entrenched that if we go deeper into the relationship with Ferrari, that they'll be the ones that pull us out of it. And I don't think that that works. I don't think that, I mean, the relationship between whatever the Toro Rosso AlphaTauri thing is and Red Bull is being looked at very heavily now. And if you want to try to meld in and be a bigger Ferrari B team, that relationship's going to look even harder. If Haas comes out of the gate and they're storming, everyone's going to look to Ferrari and go, what the hell did you give them? And when did you give it to them? You know, that would be the natural thing because, yeah, they haven't proven that they've been able to do it themselves. They've tried to do upgrades. They have not worked. Every time this team has tried to bring an upgrade package through, it hasn't worked. So, yeah, I mean, I am watching this team to see if they actually sign the next Concorde because I don't know why Gene wants to still do it. And he gets his name. You know, I guess if he wants to sell his machinery, it's fine. But, yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of the Haas is going to sell to Andretti. I don't think it's going to be direct. I think it will be, hey, Gene doesn't want to sign the Concorde, and therefore now there's an open entry into the 10th team, and maybe that's how Andretti comes in earlier. So, I mean, that's one way that it could work. But, yeah, I mean, it kind of sucks. I don't know what Gunther's future plans are. I'm sure he's going to land on his feet. I'm not worried about that. I'm sure he will at least be a pundit for somewhere, and then they'll have to have the dump button on standby. that would be hilarious, especially if he's on American television somewhere. That would be great. And I would tune in for, if nothing else, to see that. But, yeah, it kind of just, you know, this broke a while ago. It feels like forever ago. But, yeah, I wanted to at least talk about it a little bit here tonight. Next story of the two drivers who aren't moving anywhere. That would be Charles Leclerc signing his long-term extension with Ferrari. And Lando Norris comes off the driver market. He was secured through 2025. McLaren haven't given an M date, which is kind of interesting. Like, Zach Brown is being interestingly coy on that one. And that's kind of what he said in his press conference. Cody, I'll let you go first. Obviously, you know, I'm a big Lando guy. I've got my own perspective on it, but what'd you think about these two moves?
I think it's great that Lando is staying at McLaren. He's kind of become their face, especially over the last bunch of seasons. You know, first really started showing his stuff 2021. And this last year, once McLaren got their new car under him, and he became so successful and got more second place finishes, I think, than any other driver on the grid, which was fantastic, especially having seen how McLaren started the season. And I think he really feels that McLaren is behind him, and that with Oscar Piastri coming in, Oscar is definitely a fantastic driver as well and will slide in very well there. But Lando has the tenure. He's got the team behind him. He's really shown his stuff, and the team, perhaps even more importantly, has shown him that they can give him a car that can perform and, possibly start winning some races for him. So I think he sees that McLaren is on the up, that, if he stays there, good things could come to him. He could get a race winning car. He could maybe at some point a little further down the road. Don't think it's going to be this year, but some point down the road, he could get a championship challenging car. And I think you kind of have to look at it too. Where else would he be going? Like, I guess now that we know that Lewis Hamilton is leaving, you could have made the argument that perhaps he could have gone to Mercedes. But then he's up against George Russell, who's, been pretty much, everyone has seen that he was going to be the torchbearer there going forward when Hamilton inevitably retired or left. A lot of people were talking about that maybe he would take Perez's place as the second driver at Red Bull. And I don't think really anybody wants to do that, because if there's a team with a clear number one driver, it is Red Bull. It is Max Verstappen's team. And you're always going to be the number two there for as long as he is at that team. So did Lando really see himself being the number two? It's either you're the number two at Red Bull and you're in the same position as so many before him, where there's potential to drive the best car on the grid, but can you do it as well as Max? Or do you, stay at the team where you can, build the team around you, you have their full support, and you meld with the team better. And I think that's what he sees in McLaren. And I think it was a great decision for him to stay. Really, you could say the same thing about Charles Leclerc at Ferrari. He is, especially with Carlos Sainz going now, it's been pretty clear that Charles is the number one driver there. The team is forming around him in much the same way. And I think his loyalty to Ferrari was maybe a little bit more challenged than Lando's at McLaren, because Ferrari has been kind of teetering on that, like, yeah, we've got a great car, but what about all the other working parts in the team? But he seems like he's really a Ferrari fanboy. He appreciates the history and, everything that goes with Ferrari. And I think he wants to see that through. And I think in his mind, there would be nothing better than winning with Ferrari and getting to join those so many before him that won for, you know, the oldest team in that Formula One has to offer. So I think ultimately he made a good decision too, because that team is forming around him in much the same way as is needed for a championship drive. So yeah, great for both of them. And seals those seats away for a long time. I think we've got a hard date for how long Leclerc's goes for, but I don't remember off the top.
I saw 2029.
Yeah, so it's a pretty long deal. He'll be there for the foreseeable future.
And I've seen Lando's be like, it's definitely going to be after the 26 season, probably 27. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to give it. They are not saying what the end date of his contract is. It is literally listed on every reporting thing as like this question mark with an asterisk next to it now. So it's beyond, it's definitely into the new regs. Conceivably it's at least as long as the Piastri deal is. So their driver lineup is set for the foreseeable future. And as a team, this is the first off season in a long time where, like, I remember, and I've said this and I've made this point many times about what Zach Brown does. When he came in, his first mission was to quiet unrealistic expectations in that team. Because you had so many different departments saying, well, if we just fix the engine or we just fixed a little bit of aero, and you know, here and there, and then boom, that's a second of lap time, and then we'll be fine. Zach Brown basically said, I'm not going to tell you we're confident until we're actually confident. The Lando move says that they're confident. Lando agreeing and staying with McLaren says that they're confident. It may... You know, it could turn bad and it might not ultimately cook, but you look at where the trajectory was beginning of 23, the end of it, with all the new pieces in place, the new wind tunnel online, new staff coming in, all the gardening leave now is done, everybody's online, and there hasn't been reports of somebody coming into the team and saying, ooh, you went down that way? Well, we tried that and it didn't work. I haven't heard that. haven't seen that. This could be your wild card team that throws the monkey wrench into a lot of people's plans, if not Red Bull, because, you know, listening to the radio as I do every weekend, I know when Lando's happy and I know when he's not. And it, especially in the race in Brazil, he was trying to figure out where's Max gaining? That's the focus. So needless to say, if nothing there, I'm excited as hell for this season to see what's going to come out of it, especially if he wins a race or two. I do share your thinking. I don't think they're ready to win a championship yet. I think you have to get into that arena, prove it, and then there's staying power and there's upgrades and things that are going to have to happen. We don't know how that's all going to pan out. But from an engineering, and it looks like they've set the stage to where they've always set the stage. They've always talked about 25 being the year. Well, I think they're moving it up now to try to say, well, we're going to really concentrate on 24 and see what that does. That springboards then you into 25, and then the massive reset. We don't know who's going to come out of that, good, bad, or indifferent yet. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what the prospects are, and I'm glad he's off the market, because the spec that was going around him was kind of crazy. And you're right. Now with a Mercedes seat open, that would have opened up a whole new area of – looking at it from that perspective. I never thought he wanted to go to Red Bull. That is the poison pill seat in F1 to be the second driver there. And you have to be really special. And I also know that Red Bull wants one of their own to sit in it so that they can exert control over it. And, you know, that's one of the things they don't have with Sergio Perez, is he's not beholden to Red Bull and how they want to operate. So, yeah, I thought that deal was DOA, you know, and I'm glad that Lando's got the long-term extension, and I'm excited to see what's going to happen. Let's put it that way. With Leclerc, kind of the same thing. This is a guy who came up through an academy and actually made it to this top step, you know, started his career at Sauber, moves over to Ferrari, has had success, has won some races. I would put him on the same level with any of the big contenders now. The same things that I'm going to say about Hamilton, I'm going to say about Leclerc. If the car is cooking and the car is great, they're going to be fighting with each other for P1 and P2. If the car isn't there and the strategy is not fixed, it's going to get frustrating really, really fast, because I do think they're both going to be in a competitive car at the beginning of that season when they sit down. So I'm happy. I'm happy for both of these guys. I mean, they've definitely worked their tails off to get here. They've come up through the ranks. They've proven their worth. And I'm glad that they're both content, at least for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So a couple small stories before we head on out of here concerning the calendar. We did have some updates there. We are going to get a new street circuit. Yay. I know everyone in Europe loves street circuits. But I actually think this one is a good one. Madrid will join the calendar in 2026 as a new street track around there. The status of the Circuit de Catalunya is very, very muddied after this announcement, because their deal expires after 2025, but F1 seemingly in their statement said, well, we don't know what we're going to do with that track necessarily yet. So there's some conjecture as to what could happen there. You know, maybe one year we see two Spanish Grand Prix. Maybe we see a Spanish Grand Prix and a European Grand Prix. That could also come back. They did that before. This would not be the first time where we've had two races in Spain. Interesting to see. But I saw this almost universal hatred about street tracks in general. And it just made me think, like, what is it about the Circuit de Catalunya that you all really liked? I mean, usually the races are pretty processional. It's a great testing track. Like, I get why, you know, it makes good uses of an F1 car. And yes, they finally got rid of the god-awful annoying chicane. But I didn't think the race was all, like, if you get a 7 out of 10 race at Circuit de Catalunya, you're doing backflips, because that's usually pretty good. I don't know if this Madrid track will cook. You don't know until you race on it, until you know how a track is going to cook. You can analyze it all you want. You can run as many virtual laps on it as you want. But Las Vegas tells you you don't know jack until you actually run on the darn thing. But Cody, what's your thought on this? I don't want to get into a street track debate. We'll save that for another time.
I think it's really exciting to get any type of new track. You get to see something new. You know, we saw it with Las Vegas, where you're going into the race and you're really not sure what you're going to get. And what we ended up getting was a banger. And hopefully we continue to see that there. So I'm open to new tracks, you know, whether it's street circuit or, you know, purpose-built track. You know, it would be cool to almost see things cycle in and out a little more frequently. And you know, I understand why people like the purpose-built tracks, because they're designed for racing and pushing cars, and it's kind of sexy that way. A lot of the best tracks that we've seen, you know, look at how much people like Spa and
Silverstone.
Silverstone, thank you. Batten 100. Yeah, Silverstone.
Back in the rest stop. Purpose-built tracks. Back in the rest stop.
Yeah, exactly. But those purpose-built tracks, they're exciting for you know, being designed in such a way to push the cars, and it looks really cool. And on a street circuit, you're working with pre-existing material mostly, and there's only so much challenge that you're going to be able to give the cars. You know, you're not going to necessarily be purpose-built tracks can be built at places where there's like lots of elevation change and stuff like that. And you're probably not going to see so much stuff like that at a street circuit, unless you're racing in San Francisco or something like that. So I understand the appeal. I still think just new tracks can be really cool, because at least for 1 year, you're not sure what you're going to get. So I'm looking forward to that. We also heard that, speaking of purpose-built tracks, one of my favorite tracks has been extended till what is it here, 2029?
Yep.
Yeah, Suzuka. I am so excited that gets to stick around, because you know, even though Suzuka maybe doesn't always produce the most exciting races, qualifying there is really cool, and man, it's just really cool to see cars flying around that track. You know, there's a YouTube video of the driver's view of Michael Schumacher setting a qualifying lap there, and it's just so cool seeing the car go around there, you know, through the S's that they have there, and under the part where it loops back around and goes over itself. It's just so cool. So I'm really excited to see that one sticking around. also gives me the chance, the excuse to go back to Japan at some point, see a race there. It's still on my bucket list. So, very happy to see that one sticking around.
Yeah, as am I. I mean, if you're an F1 fan, that track has a ton of history behind it. It's got a lot of, like I said, history, lineage, and some historically really good racing. And, you know, I think in the modern era, it's produced some fair races. It's not as wide as these cars. You know, if you change the cars, I think you change the raceability on this track. And if you make the cars less mm-hmm. wide, I think these cars are just flat out too wide for a few different F1 circuits, Monaco being another one. My God. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't run there. We should still run in Monaco. We should definitely still run in Japan. We should definitely run in Suzuka. Those fans are fanatical. They put the fan in fanatical over there. So they're great. They deserve to have a circuit at its spiritual home. So I'm very happy to hear that happened. And it also tells me that, you know, it's not going to be all street circuits. It's going to be street circuits where the opportunity is correct. Now, I understand the new griping about, like, Miami is technically a street circuit and Jeddah is technically a street circuit, but come on, it's got like a quarter mile of actual, like, a bike path that they call a street circuit. That's really a purpose-built facility. I actually looked at the calendar and I would say that we're about maybe a third. And I think that's probably, I think, the upper limit of what it should be. I do think that there's a place for purpose-built tracks. That's obviously what I would call plan A if you're designing a circuit. But if you want to go somewhere where you haven't been able to get to, it takes time and a lot of effort. And it took Circuit of the Americas here 2.5 years just to get built. It's a long commitment. And the financing has to be there, and the backing has to be there, and the organization has to be there. And, oh, yeah, they got to be able to pay the dang F1 sanctioning fee. And not only that, but once you build it, you have to try it. You have to maintain it. And that can be just as bad. And, you know, if you're in certain parts of the world that has all four seasons, sometimes within a month, you can imagine what bending and heaving and freezing and thawing does to your pristinely smooth racetrack. So I get why sometimes a street circuit can be a viable alternative. I'm not saying that's what I wanted to be all the time, but I get the reasons why, especially to some interesting locales, like Madrid, which I've never really seen around the city center before. It'll give me a chance to see it on TV for the first time. So yay there. But yeah, I like the mix. I really do. And speaking of potential venue, so we're going to end this with – we're going to leave the actual facts. We'll report some of the facts. Then we're going to do some speculation before we head on out of here, because we had a story break about our own backyard. And apparently, Formula One management has trademarked. And I'm going to try to bring this up here. Let's see if I can scroll through my timeline about all of this. Formula One licensing has applied for trademarks for the following names: the Chicago Grand Prix, Formula One Chicago Grand Prix, the Grand Prix of Chicago, the Formula One Grand Prix of Chicago. So that got everybody talking. It even got our local media talking. I was approached by three other people the weekend that this came out. What do you know and who do you know? And the fact of the matter is I don't know a whole lot other than this has happened. That's really where the reporting kind of ended. The other thing that I've been looking for and I have not been able to find, and you talk about organization, who would potentially be the backer of this? Because I don't see FOM doing another Vegas. They're not going to come in and they're not going to build all these facilities here. Even if this was a potential thing. Now, what we do have in Chicago is we do have the street circuit that goes for NASCAR that's run one event so far over the 4th of July weekend. And to say biblical rain interfered with that event is being mild, because I think we got a foot of rain over 2 days when it hadn't rained in like a month. So we've yet to see what exactly NASCAR can do. I will also tell you that driving around the downtown area, the day they closed everything out, it was absolute chaos trying to get out of the downtown area. It took an hour to go a mile and a half. to try to get out of downtown that day. So the mass speculation is that they would use a lot of the same layout that the NASCAR track, or that they would use a lot of the same streets and convert it into maybe an FIA grade one spec. I don't see that happening. I think that circuit is way too narrow. There's parts of that where there was only one NASCAR that could fit. I don't see there being true. Even a Formula One car with the current specs. So you'd have to find a different type of alternative if you were going to go that route. And here's the other thing. When you're talking about Chicago, and you're talking about our area of the world, no real discussion can be had unless you have the support of two big entities. One, the mayor, and two, the alderman of where this proposed circuit, if it ever comes up, would be ran. Because if you don't have both of those people in lockstep, it does not happen in this city. And I've not heard of any proposed sites. I've not heard of any proposed organizing groups. So I don't know what the future of this would possibly be. And then I started thinking, I'm like, well, what could you do? How could you actually make this work? So now we're leaving the factual, and now this is just me spitballing here. Okay, I want to make that part perfectly clear. We do have a football team that is looking to build a new stadium. That football team has recently closed on a 900-acre tract of land on the outskirts of the city, actually within a suburb. If you want to go around all of the Chicago political BS and all that mess, that's where you'd go. You'd partner with the football team and do a Miami model, but do it in the way that you want. You can build whatever you want. So it would be kind of a semi street circuit where you can use your parking lots for whatever you want, and then they turn into parking lots over the winter. But you can configure that sucker any way that you want. And that land is, there's going to be nothing on it. Whatever is on that, it's the old Arlington Racecourse. They're going to knock it down. They've already started to knock it down. And then you could build your super stadium on there. Your hotel infrastructure could be on there. Your possibilities are actually really, really interesting if you wanted to go that route. So maybe it doesn't happen for 10 or 15 years. I don't know. It's interesting that this happened. That's kind of my thought. You could also do that same Miami model, actually at the stadium that's already there, Soldier Field. There is some infrastructure around it, but you'd be a lot more restricted. You're going to be dealing with the mayor of the city of Chicago. You're going to be dealing with the alderman of the city of Chicago. Don't know how feasible that would be, but that would get your lakefront view. You would definitely still have that.
It would be really cool to race kind of like around the museum campus, right? And all that there. Don't see how you could do it, but it would be really cool. I'm kind of in the same boat as you, where it's like, I don't really see all the pieces falling into place here. I mean, just going off of that, they reserved the names. That's really not a whole lot to go off of. It's kind of just saying, yeah, maybe someday, who knows? I will say that if it does happen, I will be there.
Oh.
Because
ditto.
I'm not going to pass up the opportunity to see a Formula One race in my backyard where I, you know, don't have to travel halfway across the country and, you know, pay all the money that goes with that. You know, just hop on the train, make it over to the track, and yeah, I'm there, baby. I will do it. there's so many things, though, that, like you're saying, have to fall into place before we get to that point. Where are you going to do it? You know, what's all the work that's going to take to get it to Formula One spec and all of that. It's exciting. I'll be a lot more excited when something a little more concrete starts to show up. And who knows? I always thought, now that we have three Grand Prix in the United States at the moment, you know, I think it would be fantastic for COTA to be a mainstay, because we've raced a COTA for, over 10 years.
10 years, yep.
Yeah, I think we've had over 10 years. And so, and COTA is a purpose-built track, and I think it's a really good track. So I would love to see COTA stay on the calendar. I think Las Vegas is, you know, contracted to be on the schedule for a while now. We saw that could be actually really cool, despite what everyone thought leading into it. Miami is the one I'm not sold on. I don't think Miami's race is that cool. I don't think they're that exciting. I think it being built in the parking lot of the football stadium is a little kind of not cool. So I couldn't help but think that, and this is now me spitballing, that it would be really cool is if you wanted to keep three circuits in the U.S. on the calendar for Formula One. You've got COTA that stays all the time. You've got Las Vegas, which is going to stay for the foreseeable future. And wouldn't it be really cool if you had a third race that cycled around? You know, maybe you do it Miami one year, you do it Chicago another year, make something work in New York, and then, you know, LA, you know, kind of hit up all over in the United States. I think it would be really cool having something like a third race that just kind of jumps around and tries a whole bunch of different stuff, because it's always keeping it fresh and interesting. And God knows, we've got a lot of big cities in the United States that would love a piece of that pie if they can make it work. So that's just me spitballing how I think that would be really cool. And please start it in my backyard. I will be there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the more I started thinking about it, I'm going, well, you could do this or you could do that. You can't build a purpose-built facility here. Our weather is too extreme. We get literally four seasons in a week some weeks.
You know, you got Road America in Wisconsin, though. They make that work.
Yeah, but IndyCars had to come in and made a lot of investment to get that thing back up to even their spec where they'd wanted it. And they've had to do a lot of massive resurfacing efforts. So, yeah, I'm not saying you can't. You can. It's got to be right. It's got to be the right tract of land with the right development group who's got deep pockets enough to see the project to fruition. And that, I just don't know that exists here yet. So when I saw this, it was like a complete out of the blue, like, what? You know, is this... I've seen some speculation that this could be nothing more than FOM wanting to put the trademarks in so that if anybody tried to make a Chicago Grand Prix t-shirt for NASCAR, that gets stopped before it ever starts, which would be kind of really dumb and stupid if that's the pettiness that we're getting into.
Yeah, that would be so lame.
Yes. Oh my God. It would be terrible if that's really all this breaks down to. Maybe that's a possibility. I don't know. But until I see an actual organizing group, or until I know who those players are, and I will watch the local media around here, and as soon as I know anything, I would gladly share it. And I even started to think of the group that brought the festival to Chicago in 2019, which is the reason I'm here. I'm not speaking into this microphone if it's not for that festival. I don't know if that group would have the same type of aspirations to bring a full-on race here. So, you know, that's what I'm looking for. You know, when I see an organizing group and I see some tangible things of wheels in motion, then that's step one. And then you got to look at the political landscape. We have a first-term mayor. He ran on a fairly progressive agenda, and I don't think that includes opulent spending like Formula One or shutting down the city for a month in it. I also don't think, and what reporters have gone out and spoken to aldermen that said that you really had to commit to one or the other, at least for the traditional street track model, which is why I'm thinking, okay, what if the football team does something out in the suburbs? You get around all that political stuff. You have a virgin tract of land that you could build, and you could put in your own elevation changes, however you'd want to do it. And you could actually make something that I think would be pretty viable and be pretty cool. And it would work with the football season, because you'd have your event, ideally, you'd slot it in, you know, in that May-June window, like when they go to Canada. They come to Canada, they come to Chicago, and then they go back to Europe. Okay, fine. That, at least calendar-wise, makes some sense. I don't think it works if you want to do it in the later part of the year, because we can get snow here in October. I don't want to race here in October. It's got to be May, June, July.
Since when does Formula One do the calendar in ways that make sense?
Well, that's true. That's never stopped them before. But anyway, this was just an interesting story. I haven't had a chance to say anything on it until now. So thanks for Cody for providing your opinion on it, and we'll follow it. We'll see wherever this goes. You know, it's an interesting concept to think about. I would be right there with you, and my retirement would go out the window, and I'd have to buy all the A packages and all that other crap. So Yeah. Anyway, so we have covered a lot. Wow. This has actually been, we didn't think we were going to talk this long, but we have. So if you've been with us so long, thank you so much. We are gearing up for the start of the season. We've got car launches that actually start like for real tomorrow. I think Williams is actually first up on the docket. Those are going to run through all of the 15th. We'll see what the 2024 Chargers look like. We will get into testing. I bet our next recording will probably be recapping of the test. Probably the week of, I would think, the 20th. Just looking at my calendar here. I'm thinking the 24th-ish, 25th maybe. But we'll see.
All right.
Yeah, it sounds about when. And we know the first race will happen the first week of March. So we are excited for that. But it is good to be back in the swing. Cody, thank you for hopping on tonight. It was great to reconnect, and let's do this for 24. D will be with us hopefully on our next one. But yeah, for all of us here, it's been Andy. It's always fun to do. And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlapF1 Podcast, or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.